To a Mexican Crossing Lines with your hosts, Cindy Gomez-Shemp
and Duke Gomez-Shemp.
You're listening to 88.1 FM KPPPLP Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. And tonight, my show is titled Gotta Have Faith. And the reason why is because I'm going to be talking about a lot of the propaganda behind what we're seeing in all of these congressional field trips to detention facilities.
Oh, yeah.
This is not America. What is America? This is not American values. We are not this. And showing all of these conditions inside of the facilities that are being called subhuman.
Mm-hmm.
Concentration camps, right? So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the people of faith getting involved, like
oh, yeah.
the Jews against ICE and many others who are going to actions, protests of ICE facilities, of Border Patrol. The message is that we must shut down all of the camps, the concentration camps, and we must shame our Border Patrol. And we must abolish ICE. This is the messaging that we are hearing. I'm going to show you how that message is led by Native Americans that were at Standing Rock, astroturfing the issue of immigration, just like I showed you on their Border Support Network chalkboard, where they showed us how they organized this massive network of organizations, people, politicians, and funders. And how their legal arguments of today, the legal arguments of people like Scott Warren of No More Deaths, who is going to be retried, not on all three counts, the conspiracy to commit transportation, the conspiracy to transport migrants with unindicted co-conspirator of Pueblos Sin Fronteras, Irineo Mujica, that charge does not proceed. That charge will not go forward in the new trial. Instead, he will only have two charges that will proceed on the harboring of the migrants, which we know were smuggled by Irineo Mujica with the help of Irineo Mujica and transported to the barn where they were held. Those are the only two charges that will proceed. And I will show you that all the way back in Standing Rock, they started to make a legal argument based on the Religious Freedom Act, signed in 1977?
78.
78? You sure it wasn't 77?
Yeah.
I was so little. You're probably more on the dot with this, Duke, but you remember what this is about. I'm going to let you chime in because you remember what this is about when we get there.
Mm-hmm.
When we get there. So that's why we're going to talk about our faith. What do you have faith in here in America? Tomorrow, we will be celebrating our nation's independence,
mm-hmm.
the 4th of July. I wish everyone in America a happy holiday. And I think there is a lot of reflection happening. For some reason, this Independence Day carries more weight, has more gravitas than years before. Maybe it's because of all of the activism and the lack of any kind of love for America, for this country, from the pseudo-activists, mercenary activists involved in this Border Support Network that are hearkening to the Jewish Holocaust when they talk about what is happening in our detention facilities and at our southern border. The fact of the matter is, as bad as detention facilities are, in the United States, they are far better than in any third world country, including Mexico. Go to Tapachula, go to Siglo XXI, and you will see that the conditions are not as good as they are here. Does that mean that Mexico should not use its detention facilities to hold people? No. Does that mean that the United States should not have detention facilities to hold people and examine where they came from, identify them, find out if they have familial ties to the people they claim they're in a family with, right? Because we know that a third of those families are fake. Do a screening medically to find out what possible communicable diseases these folks may have and put them in quarantine if necessary. No, of course not. We're not just going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We can't just raise everything to the ground. And no matter how much you hate our current, yes, broken immigration system, full of loopholes and full of problems within its detention facilities, it's not going to go away. You're not going to make it go away overnight. So we're going to talk about having a logical discussion about all of this tonight on A Mexican Crossing Lines. First, though, I want to thank all of you who have sent me messages, who have sent me information, posts, screen captures, including one recently that said, "You know who you are out there. If we close our the detention facilities, where are these folks going to go? Do we just dump them out on the street? Is that what we're supposed to do now?" And a second one, which said, "Stop comparing our detention facilities to concentration camps. People that were in concentration camps during the Holocaust couldn't just leave. These folks, they came into the United States, if they were so deathly afraid of being in a detention facility, why did they turn themselves over to Border Patrol to be taken to a detention facility? Why did the volunteers with groups like Al Otro Lado prepare them to go directly into the detention facility?" Right? And by the way, the folks that are in those detention facilities can self-deport and go home and leave those horrible conditions behind. Right now they could if they want. But I don't think they want to, because they want to stay in the United States and seek asylum. And as you know, many of them don't qualify. So thank you for all your comments, phone calls, emails, everything. And I want to ask for folks to continue to support our work and our efforts, not just the need that we have for equipment for our upcoming trip to Tijuana, but for the funding of the trip itself. I have a lot of plans, places I want to visit, and stories that I want to bring back to an American audience and to share with my audience in the Fargo-Moorhead metro region. Duke, how can folks get a hold of us and support our work?
Well, thank you. I'd like to say thank you also to the people who have supported us. It's really wonderful when we see people across the country and locally that help us thrive as an organization, thrive as a radio station. Remember, we are a nonprofit organization, and we run a radio station, a low-power FM radio station in Fargo-Moorhead. And we're also doing Facebook Lives, and we're taking our shows, and we're taking them on the road. And people like you who have supported us have allowed us to continue to expand our work, to improve our work. And I'm just going to tell you a few ways to send us information. A lot of you send it in many different ways, but I just want to know you have options. You can find us on Facebook, obviously, at 88.1 Fargo-Moorhead, the People's Press Project, and Mexi-Can. You can also do a call-in message for us if you want to leave us a voicemail, a voice message. You can call 701-566-0917. Again, that number is 701-566-0917. You can also go to email to cindy@kpppfm.com and me, Duke, @kpppfm.com. And you can go to our website, kpppfm.com. There you're going to find our shows, our audio podcasts. We take the audio from the show, stripping down. Many of them we use on the local radio station, so people driving around Fargo-Moorhead or people listen to radios in their house still, like I do. I still have a radio inside my house. I listen to radio on a hi-fi can hear us, can hear the broadcast of these shows locally. And if you go to kpppfm.com and go to the Mexican Crossing Lines, you can find all the shows there. You can look at other programming we have, listen to that online. They're all podcasts. And also on kpppfm.com, there's a donate tab, kpppfm.com/donate. Please click on there, read a little bit about us, and make a donation to support the station. We've been going for over 3 years, and we manage a radio station that reaches, you know, nearly 200,000 people in a city that's considered rural, but it's actually the largest metropolitan area between Spokane, Washington, and Minneapolis. So we have quite a reach here, you know, as much as many of the commercial radio stations, they go a lot further outside of town. We do a little bit too, but there's a lot of people in the inner circle in the community here that actually listen to us, and we're very grateful to all of you out there who listen to us. Just ran into a guy the other day that was at a gas station, and he's playing music, and I thought, hey, that's the same channel I have on. I said, hey, do you listen to 88.1? He says, yeah, I'm listening to him right now. I'm like, great. So I talked with him, you know, and stuff like that. He's really excited and told me the other stations he listens to and why. And he said ours was one of his favorite ones he goes to all the time because he doesn't like the bubblegum music on the other ones. And he doesn't like all the advertising because we don't advertise. We do underwriting. Mm-hmm. Underwriting is an opportunity for you to take your business, your idea, your website, have us do an underwriting spot on the radio. You make a tax-deductible contribution to our station, and we put your business on the air, and people hear it, and people will go to it. But it's done a little bit different than advertising, kind of like what you hear from public broadcasting, you know, and it's just a little bit different, but it's something we can legally do. So if you're interested in that, go to kpppfm.com/underwriting opportunity. There's a whole webpage about it there. But I would really like to thank people for supporting us, listening to us, watching us, and commenting on our show. It's been great. We'll be on YouTube, you know, doing some lives on there at Duke 1517. Don't forget to go to YouTube and subscribe. And we get enough subscribers, and when we get approved for our partnership agreement, we're going to start doing a few live shows there and doing some fun things we can do on YouTube. And we'll still maintain the Facebook lives too, because all you people are here right now.
That's right. Well, let's dig right into the show. We have been getting a lot of images and videos of people in detention facilities. It's almost as if we never knew that they existed before today. And, you know, prisons are not places that Joe Q Public can tour and take pictures in. There's confidentiality issues. There's legal issues. There's safety issues. There's so many different issues involved in detention facilities. Although they are not prisons, they operate in much the same way as a prison or jail facility would. People are being detained. They have to be checked out. They are not allowed to just, you know, come and go as they please. If they self-deport, if they decide they want to go home, yes, then they can be sent back home. They are free to leave if they're not here to stay, but most of these folks are choosing to stay. Now, these images, they have been shared in the Border Support Network. Make no mistake, this Border Support Network is calling the shots, not just on the policy, but on the actions side. Here's the post made about these congressional trips. P.H. Esder posted in the Border Support Network about the congressman, Joaquin Castro, who led this delegation to the border facilities, and what he had to say. And Border Support Network posted that his statement said essentially, and I'm going to actually play his statement in a little bit, but if you go to the second screenshot there, it shows they went to the Clint Border Patrol Station. And let's go back to the first one real quick and scroll down for me, because I believe that it has some of the allegations that were made about people not getting medication that they needed, parents separated from their children in these facilities, the showers or the toilet facilities being dirty, or people being told that they had to drink out of toilets. I'm sure you've heard a lot of the allegations being made by now. I just wanted to show you that one of the places these discussions is taking place is the place where a lot of this information is generated, and that is in the Border Support Network. PH Esder with Luis Hernandez posted this information also in Spanish, which includes talking about the delegation, the Hispanic delegation from the Hispanic caucus. Okay. So we have all of these members of Congress. We have media. We have all of these different things at this detention facility. The delegation was presided over and was led by Joaquin Castro of Texas 20th District and Veronica Escobar of Texas's 18th District. I can barely see that text there at the bottom. Oh, and hours before they were to go inside of the station, of the Border Patrol station in El Paso, Texas, they went there. They claimed to investigate reports of abuse and negligence, which they pointed out they felt was the responsibility of the authorities. And they included Judy Chu of California's 27th, Pete Aguilar of California's 31st, Norma Torres of California's 35th, Sylvia Garcia of Texas's 29th, Alejandra Ocasio-Cortez of New York's 14th, Lori Trahan of Massachusetts's 3rd, Joe Kennedy, the 3rd of Massachusetts's 4th, Mark Vesey, Texas's 33rd, Ayanna Presley, who I'm sure you've seen on her media junket, press junket, going around and sharing the speech that she made there and what she saw and heard, Madeline Dean of Pennsylvania's 4th, and Rashida Tlaib of Michigan's 13th, and Greg Stanton of Arizona's 9th. Here's what Joaquin Castro had to say at this press conference. Here's the video. One moment, please.
Our facility, run by Southwest Key, Border Patrol Station number 1 in El Paso, and right now, the Border Patrol Station in Clint, Texas. We came today and we saw that the system is still broken and that people's human rights are still being abused. We remain very concerned about the conditions in which people are being kept. In fact, at the Border Patrol Station number 1, we had a chance to visit with about 15 or 20 mothers, some of whom had been at that Border Patrol Station for over 50 days. Some had been separated from their kids. When we went into the cell, it was clear that the water was not running. There was a toilet, but there was no running water for people to drink. In fact, one of the women said that she was told by an agent to drink water out of the toilet. These are the conditions that have been created by the Trump administration. These are the inhumane conditions that folks are facing. And so this is not just about more money for Border Patrol or for the Department of Homeland Security. This is also about the standards of care, the standards of care by which people are being taken care of, both children and adults. And we remain committed in Congress to making sure that these conditions improve, that this system be morally defensible. I would also like to very quickly, before I turn it over, speak to the Facebook page that was discovered by ProPublica today. That was a vulgar, disgusting, and vile page. That shows, unfortunately, that there are many within CBP who become desensitized to the point of being dangerous to the migrants in their care and to their co-workers. There are many good agents who are overwhelmed by those, like those who were part of that Facebook page. And we expect that there will be a full investigation. I expect that there will be a congressional investigation. to get to the bottom of it. With that, I want to turn it over to the Congresswoman from El Paso, Veronica Escobar.
Thank you, Joaquin. Thank you, Chairman.
That's enough of that. Yeah. If you want to go and check out the whole press conference for yourself, I'm sure you will. I just wanted you to hear the rhetoric. I wanted you to hear the message. Border Patrol, bad, dangerous. They had AOC surrounded by cops, like, you know, somebody might kidnap her or worse. She was acting very skittish, like maybe she needed to be protected because these Border Patrol agents definitely were very threatening to her. And at the same time, she needed police protection. She was being heavily guarded by the very authorities that she is castigating with her words, that Julian Castro is castigating with his words. I think he wanted to reel it in a little bit by saying there are a lot of good Border Patrol agents. I mean, this is the lowest of the low, okay? I have been criticizing Border Patrol actions like kidnappings, rapes, corruption. Look, it's there. It exists. People know it on both sides of the border. The same is true of authorities in Mexico, in the INAMI, in immigration. AMLO announced he was firing over 500 people recently. So we know it happens. But it is not the bulk of what is happening. That is being mischaracterized. And sure, I'm happy that they're finally going to try to set some standards of care and of the quality within these detention facilities. But let's be clear. These folks are obstructionists. They don't want to fix the problem. And in fact, their cohorts in the Border Support Network funded and organized these caravans and brought these thousands and thousands of people and overflowing these detention facilities, making the conditions that they are complaining about, that they went to get the photo op of. Remember the three steps that Evan Duke, the founder of the Border Support Network, told us that they use. First, you put out the heartbreaking images, audio. Then you circulate the hell out of it. Put it everywhere. Get it on a t-shirt. Then ask for money. Raise money. Lots and lots and lots of money. That's what this is really about. These folks just want their cut. And it is very disingenuous right now when Border Patrol, literally Border Patrol, has turned into a rescue, search and rescue operation. That's what they're doing. They're glorified babysitters that are being put through hell, working hours, Border Patrol, I mean, in both countries, in Mexico and the United States. Things are out of control. No country could have foreseen this. No country could have come up with a solution quick enough to deal with the massive number of people coming over our border. So to stab the Border Patrol, the people that are literally running themselves ragged right now in the back at a moment while when people connected in the Border Patrol network to these very politicians are being shamed and are being told that they are horrible for trying to do the best damn job that they can under the frickin' circumstances. Okay.
Yeah.
Right, dude? I mean, seriously, you've seen what I've shown you. Those Border Patrol talking to those people saying, please don't put the baby in the water.
Yeah. And especially in Mexico, too, is that I've always noticed that the officials have been very helpful to people and they aren't abusive to people. And they're just saying, hey, you know, don't do that. Don't do that. Come over here. You got better stuff happening over here. A lot of negotiating, sincere negotiating. And also short-staffed. The United States is immensely understaffed. The facilities aren't big enough. I mean, it's a huge problem, and those people are working hard, and you know, and very frustrated, and not really much support. You know, and they're expected to take on this monument of things that have happened that are so unusual that no one was ready for, and no one is equipped for.
Maybe it's going to lead to better conditions, and ultimately, that will be a good outcome, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's going to lead to changes in policies that will figure out a way of getting families and especially children out of these detention facilities and usher them into a shelter or whatever. But we don't have that infrastructure right now. And what are we really asking for to be accelerated? Do we want to just take all of these kids and put them in the adoption system? Because that's another form of kids stealing from their original families and culture and parents. And I don't like that. Do you? Mm-mm. That doesn't sound like a solution to me. These folks that are decrying the conditions, they have no solutions for you. All they have is criticism. Here is a delegation presided over by the Congress member Julian Castro. And you can prominently see Alejandra Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib. Nanette Barragan was also in one of these pictures. There was a lot of people holding signs saying abolish ICE, stop putting kids in cages, stop separating families. And someone took the opportunity to put in a plug for no more deaths and ask that they drop Scott Warren's charges because, as you know, you can see it up there in the upper corner of this image, humanitarian aid is never a crime. Drop the charges. Mm-hmm. They are referring to the charges pending against Scott Warren. And folks, he is being retried. We will talk more in depth about that in a minute. But it all congregates under the same umbrella. There's Nanette Barragan in the blue shirt next to Rashida Tlaib. And as you know, Nanette Barragan was connected to one of the activists working directly with Al Otro Lado. This is a very, very tight network. It's massive. It's vast. But they are tight. They got each other's backs. Even when they find out, like Senator Merkley did, that the group from Al Otro Lado had been accused of participating with the Border Support Network people that kidnapped a minor from the shelter Agape and also provided drugs to that minor and to the migrants at that shelter. Never mind. It's still okay to work with these folks because they're tight. Ayanna Presley of Massachusetts spoke at this event as well. There she is at the podium. AOC is looking at her with a lot of attention. And of course, as I mentioned, there was a massive escort, more so than for anyone else, by the police of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And when they went inside, they posted that they had their cell phones taken. They couldn't take any cameras in. They were told not to speak to the detainees. But Julian snuck a camera in and he took this video where you will see Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez speaking in Spanish, asking the women if they need any medical attention and sitting on the ground with them as they talk about the conditions in the facility. Here it is.
Yes.
Is there anybody that needs medical assistance now?
They said that they changed her medicine.
What you see on screen is a list of the names of the women. It's a list.
There's a woman here. There's a woman here. The doctor told her she needs a biopsy for the lump on her back.
We obviously don't have the facilities to do a surgical biopsy here, but we'll make sure that we're continuing her care. It's on her record, and when she gets to her next stop, wherever that is, whether it's in our custody or out, those records go with her.
Is the nurse psych on the tour we're getting today?
Okay. They've actually brought out images that have a lot more crowding than this particular video does, but as you can see, the women have blankets. Somebody's asking about getting a bump on their back biopsied. seems to me like the conditions may not be ideal, as I said. I hope that these suddenly interested people in Congress about the conditions inside of these facilities are going to actually help change them. But what's really disingenuous is the part where Julian Castro tells you that this is happened because of the Trump administration. No, excuse me. Hell to the no, because this was going on during the Obama administration. This was going on during the Clinton administration. This was going on during the Reagan administration. This was going on. Okay. Don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. I've been following. Mexicans are the people most affected by this issue, and I've been watching. I've been reporting on it. I've been writing about it for a very long time, and Democrats did not give a rip. Never did. It's hella surprising they do now. It seems very disingenuous. It seems like you're taking an opportunity to exploit a problem that's been around for decades and decades because it suits your political agenda and your fundraising needs. Also, political cycle. You know, we got a lot of people running for office right now. Here is how the Border Patrol chief responded. Did you realize that was Ted Cruz? I was watching this video the first time, and I was like, holy cow, that's Ted Cruz.
What's on his face?
I don't know. It looks like a waddle, like one of those turkey things. I don't know. Here's what the Border Patrol chief said in response. Please listen objectively.
On average, my agents do about 30 hospital runs per day going into McAllen. So I think anything that we can collectively bring to that table is to keep people healthy. But there are a lot of people that are traveling to the United States right now that are already ill and infirm. Many times we won't know about it. They're not showing any signs of it. But I will show you just how dedicated we are to it. We have one Border Patrol station right now that we've dedicated as an infirmary for quarantine because of all of the illnesses that we've seen. I've asked the governments of Central American countries is to work with Mexico, is it to at least do vaccinations on their southern borders to actually improve this. We are seeing every infirmity that you can name, from mumps to TB, to scabies, you name it, our agents are seeing it. But every day we deal with it. We have three stages of medical screening that happen right now. Initially in the field when they're first encountered by Border Patrol agents, when they actually make it to our facilities, where either doctors or nurse practitioners do it. And then after, when they're getting ready to be released, there is actually another screening process that occurs. In the meantime, if anybody complains about having a fever, about feeling sick, we are actually transporting to the hospital.
Okay. One of the people that was on this tour, Duke.
Yeah.
One of the people that was on this tour along with AOC that went into the Clint detention facility that saw the conditions of the kids there, the people, how much food they got, what their pantry looked like, was none other than Border Network News' Anthony Agüero, known as Conservative Anthony online. He was there. And I don't know if y'all went and saw his video explaining what he saw, the conditions inside of that facility. But I highly recommend that you go and watch it. Watch and listen to an objective person that went there, saw the same exact thing, okay? Same exact thing as these folks that went in, the members of Congress. And they have very different recollections of what's going on. So folks, and you know, I was watching Point of View with Chris Berg last night. They did an excellent job in sharing a video clip of AOC leaving. I'm not sharing it on my show, but if you want to go watch that segment on Valley News Live's Point of View with Chris Berg, there was a clip that was shown in the media that cut off a question that AOC was asked as she was leaving, telling people that women were told to drink out of the toilets.
Mm-hmm.
And the question was, did you see that?
Yeah.
Did you witness it? Like, if somebody is telling you that there's no water and they're drinking out of the toilets, it's anecdotal. And sure, maybe you believe them, but what kinds of evidence are they producing?
Mm-hmm.
The claims that are being made, I believe, are exaggerated, and they're taking advantage of the moment, right?
Yeah.
They're taking advantage of the moment. So I wanted to share with you this article, blog post, I don't know what to call it, about Jeff Markley by Catherine Foster on June 27th. And it is a guest's view, a local opinion. I will read that to you. It says, with the recent headlines about the continued horrors children at the border are experiencing, I wanted to give a shout out to Senator Jeff Merkley for the dedicated work he's doing to assist these legal asylum seekers, especially the youngest ones. He was the first U.S. senator to publicly document children in cages, and he's made his mission to educate himself and his constituents about the conditions people seeking asylum are forced to live in, and behind the scenes, he's also quietly assisting individual cases. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Of unaccompanied minors, I'm sure, no doubt, as I was told by the pastor at the Agape shelter where the Border Support Network activists provided drugs to the migrants and kidnapped an unaccompanied minor. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
It was right before Senator Merkley went to visit, in
mm-hmm.
fact.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that in this opinion piece, he's one instance I know about. Here is one instance I know about. In May, I volunteered with Al Otro Lado, a binational legal services organization that provides legal orientation to asylum seekers in Tijuana, Mexico. I think they spelled practicing law without a license
yeah.
wrong.
Yeah, they did. They left it out.
On May 22nd, three Al Otro Lado volunteers accompanied three French-speaking unaccompanied minors from Guinea to the U.S. port of entry to present themselves to U.S. Customs and Border Protection officers to seek asylum. The boys were fleeing political persecution, which left family members unlawfully arrested, detained, and others murdered. Oh, they're talking about those two kids, which the activists, you know, helped to keep in this most dangerous part of Tijuana, where they were robbed and murdered by prostitutes. This is what one of the volunteers told me, says the blog. When we arrived at the border, we were asked to speak to a supervisor. The supervisor appeared, but said the CBP would only accept the boys for processing if we left them alone at the gate and did not insist on watching them be accepted into custody. She said the volunteers were hesitant to leave the children alone because of the past experiences of CBP turning children away from the gate. After a couple of exchanges, the volunteers called Nicole Ramos, director of Border Rights Protection at Al Otro Lado, and within a couple of minutes, they had Senator Merkley on the phone.
Hmm.
What do you make of that, Duke? Did you know that Nicole Ramos had Senator Merkley on speed dial?
Speed dials, the right number one, and then he picks up, too, right away, I guess.
I always suspected it because I showed you that Al Otro Lado volunteer, Sofia Marie de Loreto Churi, worked for Nanette Barragan, who was at the side of Nicole Ramos at the port of entry when they recorded and shamed these Border Patrol officers with Congress members like Nanette Barragan,
mm-hmm.
like Jeff Merkley, into letting people in even when they were full. And it goes on to say that Merkley patiently requested to speak with the CBP supervisors, who was refusing to allow volunteers to witness the boys being accepted for processing. CBP agents refused to speak with Merkley, saying that the senator wasn't the agent's boss, the president was, and he would only take a call from the president. After several minutes, the agent finally acquiesced and accepted the boys for processing. Senator Merkley was very patient during the whole exchange and clearly focused on making sure the boys' case was properly handled. Well, folks, just so you remember, Senator Merkley went back to the Agape shelter to interview, unaccompanied minors. He was told that there were a number of unaccompanied minors that were living on the streets and that were being housed by American activists in the Border Support Network. Senator Merkley knows all about it, but you know why he don't care? Because Nicole Ramos has him on speed dial. Nicole Ramos is working with these senators. Is it clear now that these politicians are working with the Antifa-connected, BAM-connected, anarchist-led Border Support Network activists that include Juan B. Mancias? Here he is at one of the many protests that have been popping off everywhere. Listen to the agenda from the Native American carpetbaggers. Oops, I mean astroturfers. Oops, I mean usurpers in the Border Support Network. Here he is. Maybe, perhaps, in a minute. Here's just a clip of it.
Yes, ma'am. Yes. And we're not going anywhere, and we're still here. And regardless of whatever kind of narrative they want to put out to tell us that we're here and tell us that these children need to be put up in some kind of cages. Hey, they did it to all of us Native people on the reservations. They took away our lands. They took away our dignity. And that's why we're here. That's why we want to be able to sing songs that are not so colonized. And that we can be able to find the songs that join us together, that bring us together. And there are songs out there that can bring us together, and we should find those that really bring us together. Those of revolution, those of communion, and those that create a better understanding of who we are. And so we just want to apologize to some of the sponsors, as one of the sponsors, to say, hey, look, let's find some words, some songs that we can sing. Nickelodeon is a good one, you know. That's why I understand that. But it's also one of the things that I grew up listening into in Catholic churches, and I know what they've done to our people. So I just want to make sure that you know where my heart is at when we talk about these children and what they've done to our people, and how many have been buried behind a lot of these missions in San Antonio. I know I can tell you there's like at least 500 children that have been buried behind behind the missions in San Antonio people don't even know about. And I think that we need to be able to tell that story and be able to understand why this kind of craziness is still happening, because nobody's ever really gone to the real story of what is occurring. So I just want to be able I want to sing a song, and I want to sing it in English, and y'all are welcome to. You can come on in anytime you want to. And it just goes, it's real simple. It just says, I will remember all our children and our people's ways. I will remember all our children and our people's ways. I will fight forever.
I am sorry. Deborah complains, this video is making me dizzy. It's all over the place. I should have warned you about that. By the way, this is Juan B. Mancias' video. He posted it. He took it. And I don't know if he was on drugs or the camera was on drugs, but it was like a roller coaster. I was like,
that's the way I felt too.
Remember? I'm like, I'm going to throw up now. And what he's saying, okay, what he's talking about is how Native Americans like him are involved in all of this because they're part of the Holocaust. They had their children. We were the first ones that had our children separated from us. Pendejo! This is the tribal leader of the Carrizo Come Crudo tribe. Este pendejo is saying that they were the first. No, 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 no. When did Columbus sail to these parts? When?
1492.
Okay. When did the Spanish arrive?
1511.
Right. The same people, Mexicans, indigenous people, Central Americans, were conquered by the people that came to this continent. And we had our children taken from us. Our ancestors had their children taken from them. This history, his history as a Northern Native American tribesman from a non-federally recognized tribe, does not give him the moral authority to speak about issues that primarily affect migrants in Mexico and from Central America, by and large. So this is what they were posting. This is a Yauli village is one of the many camps that they established to do their border support network of activism. And this is an Univision story. One of you, many of you, sent it to me, in which children had been writing letters, or teens had written letters saying that they hadn't taken baths, that they were mistreated, that they slept on the floor, written in their own handwriting.
Okay.
It was posted by Juan B. Mancias's page, Yalui Village. What else is the rhetoric around and the propaganda around this campaign? Well, I couldn't find a better article to illustrate the cluster beep than this one on No More Deaths in the High Plains Reader. This particular article illustrates better than anything I could find the whole conglomeration of crap in one place of what the rhetoric is behind all of this. And this group that here in Fargo went and protested outside of Senator John Hoeven's office were all decrying the inhumane conditions of what they called concentration camps. Leading them was Democratic Socialist of America's representative from North Dakota, Ruth Ann Buffalo. And who else was leading these nationwide protests? Why, none other than MoveOn.org, United We Dream, American Friends Services Committee, and dun dun dun, Families Belong Together, Paola Mendoza, working with Mark Lane. Paola Mendoza, working with Al Otro Lado. Paola Mendoza, co-founder of the Women's March. Chilean actress. That one. The one that was at the border talking to Maria, the lady with the twins that were running through the tear gas, set up, pick up, handed out her phone number to a bunch of these migrants that she then helped to go pick up on the U.S. side. It's a part of a massive human smuggling operation, folks. But this is not what these protesters came to talk about. No, they wanted to talk about other things, like, for example, indigenous lands, because that has everything to do with this story. Indigenous lands are very important. One of the people protesting from Moorhead, Claudia, said she was angry and ashamed of the treatment that migrants were getting, and she also recognized the occupation of indigenous lands. What?
Mm-hmm.
How in the hell does that have anything to do with anything? Oh, you mean the eagle and the condor prophecy, yep. Claudia? Mm-hmm. Is that what you're talking about? And also, why don't we throw in the mistreatment of Native Americans all across the continent, period? Let's throw that in for good measure.
Mm-hmm.
She was quoted, "I think people here in North Dakota and Minnesota really need to be more aware of what's happening it's important to recognize that we all occupy indigenous land and that all the white people here are immigrants and that we are guests on this land. Way to go, Standing Rock leadership.
Yeah.
I know that you're still at the front of all of this nonsense. And they also, just for good measure, I think, decided to throw in missing and murdered indigenous women. Here, Amanda Vavir, a member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Ojibwe and a member of the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Task Force, joined the protest. How many Lakota and Ojibwe? And, I mean, were there more Northern Native Americans than Mexicans and Central Americans at this protest that's supposed to be for us?
Yep.
Because you forgot to invite us. Mm-hmm. You forgot to have us there. She, along with her son, Trayvon Spears, sang, as I pray, a Lakota prayer song while holding signs. Why didn't you sing De Colores? Why didn't you sing any of the Spanish songs that are about migration, that are about God being with us? Why? You know why? Because you are astroturfing an issue that primarily affects Mexicans, you Standing Rock mercenary activists. And of course, they also had to throw into this article the defense of No More Deaths, Scott Warren. Here it is. It's a reenactment, Vavir said. The government is doing the same thing they did to indigenous people. The exact same thing. What they did in Africa, what they did for resources, they're covering up shame. A guy is facing up to 20 years in prison for leaving food and water out in the desert for those coming across, Spears said. Notice how all these brainwashed people just regurgitate the talking points of these Border Support Network activists, but without ever checking the facts of the case, which I have shown you. That's pretty crazy, she continues. Why would you ever try to charge someone with that? They didn't. You need to read the original story and the court proceeding. Spears is referring to Scott Warren, a professor and member of No More Deaths, No Más Muertes, who was charged in 2018, after helping hungry and dehydrated. No, he was charged for smuggling and harboring.
Yeah.
Stop lying. According to azcentral.com, prosecutors with the U.S. Attorney's Office in Arizona will seek a retrial after Warren's original trial ended in a hung jury in the last month. Okay. So we put all of this poop into the same article because all of these different diverse interests are pulling for power within the Border Support Network. One of them is the Society of Native Nations, which you see in this next post, a member of. Her name is Jennifer K. Falcone. You may recall in previous reports I showed you that she and a whole contingent of these Border Support Network activists were protesting in the Texas Capitol against a law that would criminalize organizing protests that would attack infrastructure projects if they caused damage to the state, like the $30 million they left the state of North Dakota footing the bill. So that other states could protect themselves from mercenary activism, the style of which these Standing Rock activists and Border Support Network activists are doing. And Jennifer K. Falcone is posting in this Facebook post that they are outside of the Carrizo Springs Migrant Youth Detention Center in South Texas getting arrested, where some of the activists were tackled and tased by Border Patrol and local police while being arrested during what they called a peaceful protest to close the concentration camps in America. Rosie Ramos Abuabara was tackled and arrested, and I think she must be the one pictured there getting in the back of the paddy wagon. Excuse me. So you guys, you recall that, right, Duke? You remember the protest in the Capitol? where they were screaming and they were holding, trying to hold a banner, a sign over the balcony.
Well, I remember that one. They're up there yelling and screaming. I'm like, I think I commented on that show. I said, well, they want to stop a piece of legislation. You don't go yell in the chambers because they're already voting on it right then. You talk to, you get allies, you get talking points, you do messaging, you get votes. You actually get in there and try to change the policy. But those guys were just all about screaming and trying to unveil this thing that you couldn't even see. And they're trying to figure out how to arrest them without them falling off the balcony and that sort of stuff. Yeah, I thought it was a very ineffective protest. But it was great for a Facebook post, basically.
Guys, let me remind you, fair point, very fair point, important point that you made there, Duke. They're not trying to be effective, though. They're trying to create outrage, make it viral, and then fundraise off of it. Create outrage, make it viral, and then fundraise off of it.
Yeah, they haven't Duke three steps. The three step.
Create outrage. Make it viral.
Mm-hmm.
Fundraise off of it.
Yep.
Lather, rinse, repeat.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care about whether or not any of these detention facilities will be closed or could be closed, whether or not we can change our policies that quickly to accommodate what chaos they created. They don't care about any of that. It's not about being effective. It's about making money off of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And Jennifer, you might be interested in seeing her Facebook page. This is her Facebook page. If you do not recall who she is, she says there she is Indigenous Lakota, Dakota, Fort Peck Poetry Policy Protector, Mom, Writer, Director, Work Hard, Be Kind. Here's her About section. It tells you more about who and what she is. Why, she's the communications coordinator for the Indigenous Environmental Network.
Interesting, yeah.
Uh-huh. But you know what's even more interesting? Oh, she's also a producer and director of the Freeman v. Morton, Morton County, that is, a Native American civil rights documentary, one of the many made about Standing Rock. And, dun-dun-dun, she is the former communications director of Raices. That organization that overnight got $20 million that hardly nobody had ever even heard of up until that point. It was really small, struggling in Texas. And it had millions of dollars funneled into it almost overnight.
Mm-hmm.
With almost zero accountability because it was all raised through a GoFraud meme,
yep.
Which I told you is the major way of laundering money in America today. Yeah. That Raices. That's who she was the former communications director of. Do you see all of the connections here?
Yeah, for sure.
Of these folks, of what they're doing and how they're doing it. Jennifer has other connections to folks. The Society of Native Nations lady, Miss Jennifer Falcon, has Castros that she close to. You mean the delegation of Congress member President Julian Castro? No, his brother. This is not Julian, although it does look like him. Miss Jennifer Falcon, her daughter, were all at Pride. Here they are holding a banner that says Black Trans Lives Matter. But this is Joaquin Castro. Look at her post, her Pride post, in which she talks about this picture. Can you read that for me, Duke?
Yes. Last night, my daughter and I marched at the San Antonio Pride Parade, and I was so glad to see my future president, Julian Castro, marching alongside of us. In 2013, we'd worked with Mayor Castro to pass San Antonio's non-discrimination ordinance, so it means a lot to him seeing us using his platform to advocate for trans reproductive rights. Lifting up those who need strong voice the most matters. Happy Pride, San Antonio.
Lifting up those who need a strong voice that most matters.
Yeah.
And You know, I was watching the contingent, the delegation of Congress members suddenly taking interest in detention facilities, which heretofore had not mattered to them at all, or Democrats in general. You're listening to 88.1 FM, KPPPLP, Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. And his face stood out. I mean, I had seen Rashida Tlaib. I had already seen Annette Barragan. I had already heard about Jeff Merkley getting involved. I had already seen Ilhan Omar, all of the Democratic Socialists of America. I had already seen Veronica Escobar and heard. But the Castros, I was like, huh, where did they come from? Well, now we know. We know where they're coming from. They're coming from these connections to the Border Support Network, and in particular to the former communication director of Raices and current communication director of Indigenous Media Rising. And another person from Standing Rock promoting information in the media, specifically about actions to shut down detention facilities connected to religion, is this Jews Against ICE action. Dozens of people were arrested. This was originally posted by Johnny Dangers in the pipeline. Could you scroll to the top, please?
Of this?
Nope.
Of this other one.
Could you scroll to the top, please? You see there, Johnny Dangers posted this in the Standing Rock Protectors Pipeline protest. All the way back from Standing Rock. And who is he reposting? A post of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's page about Jewish people standing for justice. And finally, we see the original tweet about arrests at the detention center in New Jersey. And if you could scroll down, we'll be able to read what the Jews Against ICE did, which is blockade the facility, in part as part of their hashtag Never Again Means campaign. You see dozens of people arm in arm linked outside of a detention facility. I showed you that Standing Rockers, aka water protectors, were doing this for photo ops early on. The Indigenous Environmental Network says, oh, no, we're going to get my money. We're going to get our donations now. They just went, found a chain link fence outside a building, called it a detention facility. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if it was one, and said, oh, let's bang on some drums and sing and pray and tell people we're out here standing against this. You ain't doing nothing, but okay then. I guess we should send you some money, right? Because they were asking for money for the actions that they're taking. The Tucson Sentinel article in which they talk about Scott Warren's trial, and we'll share that with you so you can take a look at it for yourself, details what the charges against him will be. Federal prosecutors have dropped the conspiracy charge, but they will pursue two other harboring charges against him. And while I am very distressed and sad that they dropped the conspiracy charges because it connects Warren and No More Deaths to Irina Mujica, Pueblo Sin Fronteras, and the drug cartel that operates in Sonoita, in the area of the border where you cross into Lukeville, Arizona, and that covers the Tohono O'odham tribe, which, as you know, is porous AF, and which, mm-hmm. as you know, has a large percentage of the population of that tribe working with, and by that I mean smuggling yeah. drugs and people through their very porous border in that reservation, where they know the authorities cannot come onto their reservation lands. Okay? All right? And so that's disturbing. That's distressing. But at least they are going to retry him. They're not dropping the charges. And I think that the reason, I'm just spitballing here, but I think that the reason why the prosecutor chose this route is because they had a hung jury the last time, and he better than anyone, or they better than anyone, the prosecution team, would know whether or not they have a better chance of proving the case on the harboring charges if they don't bring the conspiracy charge. And let's just remember that Irineo Mujica, even though he was stopped by Border Patrol with undocumented people in his vehicle, was never charged with a nothing. Nothing. I don't know why. I think he should be, but he wasn't never charged. So the new trial is slated for November 12th. Warren has until 10 days before the trial to accept or reject a plea deal. My guess is that, like last time, they will not accept a plea deal. I think that might be a stupid idea on the second trial, because if I'm right about my theory on the prosecution's strategy, then they have a much better chance of convicting him this time. And like the other nine No More Deaths volunteers who did get convicted on misdemeanors, his charges will be more severe, and he could face substantial jail time. Warren was quoted as saying, "We are ready for this second trial and more prepared than ever. However, I, as well as most of you, remain unclear what the point of all this effort, time, and money has been. It's been deeply exhausting and troublesome to my friends and family and loved ones, but we have all done our best, and we really should take a moment to celebrate that we prepare for the future." He made a statement, a public statement, a press statement, saying, "While I do not know what the government has hoped to accomplish here, I do know what the effort of all of this has been. A raising of public consciousness, a greater awareness of humanitarian crisis in the borderland, more volunteers who want to stand in solidarity with migrants, local residents stiffened in their resistance to border walls and the militarization of our communities, and a flood of water into the desert at a time when it is most needed." So, the Tucson Sentinel blames the fact that he is being recharged on the Trump administration.
Okay.
Amazingly. Is this being tried in Arizona? Well, if the president had anything to do with this, thank God. He did need to be retried, and we need to stop letting folks like this off.
Definitely.
As lawyers worked on scheduling a future trial date, Greg Cui Kendall, one of Warren's attorneys who appeared by phone, said that he would subpoena Irineo Mujica, and said that the border aid organizer who provides would provide exculpatory evidence in Warren's case. Ooh. And Mujica has remained at the periphery during the last trial, as prosecutors argued that Mujica was involved in the so-called caravans of Central American migrants through Mexico last year, was a vital link in the conspiracy between Warren and the two men he was arrested with, and he still is. However, while Border Patrol agents testified during the trial that Mujica was stopped at checkpoints and evidence pointed to his potential role in smuggling people, Mujica was not called to testify by prosecutors nor charged with conspiracy, a mistake I hope is remedied soon. That was just me. I was adding that at the end.
Yeah.
Check out the whole Tucson Sentinel article for yourselves. I won't read it all here. I just wanted to give you some of the highlights, but I wanted to share that the Border Support Network media people were sharing this news, and with much dismay saying, "Oh no, this is problematic. Why are they doing this?" One of the people in the comments was a lady named Mary Orozco. And she made a post about how she made a comment, saying that her daughter was one of the hashtag Cabeza 9. And I was like, those are the other activists of No More Deaths. So she's the mother of one of the activists of No More Deaths that was already previously convicted on misdemeanors.
That's right.
And so I went on her page, and this is what she posted about this link about this article about an award that her daughter received for her work with No More Deaths, the John Callahan Youth Award. And it was given to Zaquila Orozco McCormick for her courageous work in No More Deaths, according to this article link, an organization that leaves food, water, and clothing for those seeking refuge in the U.S. as they cross the harsh Sonoran Desert. Congratulations and good work. This is one of the Cabeza Nine that was already convicted. And of course, she's carrying a little art piece out of
slashed water bottles.
Slashed and smashed milk jugs.
Yeah.
They don't even use white ones. Don't they use black ones? Mary Orozco also posted the article I'm about to read to you or read from to you in The Nation, which I highly, highly, highly suggest that you come acquainted with and read for yourselves. Titled, Activists Are Invoking Religious Freedoms to Save Migrants' Lives. Folks, this is super important. It's why we all got to have faith. Why these folks have to drag faith through the mud. It's the reason why the first caravans brought by Irineo Mujica and Pueblo Sin Fronteras were called the Signs of the Cross, the Via Crucis. It's why the religious iconography and ideology and rhetoric was tied to the caravan. Why they changed it from the caravan to the Exodus, the Central American Exodus. They wanted you to be thinking about God. It's why Scott Warren in his last trial said that every time he found remains in the desert, he performed a little ceremony, a moment of silence, because he is trying to inject religion here. It is why they have hijacked movements, groups, and organizations like the ones called the Good Samaritans that preceded groups like No More Deaths and Border Angels that were putting water in the desert, which were primarily made up of clergy. Priests, nuns, what have you. It is why we have the new sanctuary caravan. It is why clergy from that caravan, new sanctuary coalition. It is why we have people from that coalition that went to get themselves arrested on the border to bring attention to the issue. It is why clergy is involved in making these fake marriages, working with Al Otro Lado. It is why clergy is walking people to the border. It is why that El Paso bishop was walking people to get their asylum claim. Because faith matters and the left is going to use it like a weapon. This Nation article is talking about it. It says in the title that they're trying to use religious freedoms, but more importantly, they're trying to use the Religious Freedom Act. In court, members of the Progressive No More Deaths group are trying to reclaim a law that's been synonymous with a conservative Christian moral agenda. So, in this article about the Cabeza Prieta Wilderness, which is why the nine convicted No More Deaths volunteers were called the Cabeza Nine in the first place. The No More Deaths group was leaving water, but they were also in the area to participate in human smuggling in their little barn called the Barn. Zaquila Orozco is quoted here. We weren't denying that what we did, said 21-year-old Zaquila Orozco, one of the convicted defendants. We were trying to prove that there's a larger reason for why people like us are doing what we're doing in the desert. In raising the defense of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, humanitarian aid workers turned to an act, the law that was that has allowed Hobby Lobby stores to avoid paying for contraceptives for their employees' health insurance. It's a law that for many has become synonymous with anti-LGBTQ discrimination and a conservative Christian moral agenda. 5 years ago, Katha Paulet argued in The Nation that it was time to repeal the Religious Freedom Restoration Act altogether. Shouldn't they get the same protections as Hobby Lobby? Today, progressive lawyers are wondering if they can make RFRA work for them. It's not an obvious strategy, since bolstering the law runs the risk of emboldening conservatives who use it to restrict LGBTQ rights, and many progressive litigants, particularly those from non-denomination faith groups, face an uphill battle in court. Judges are not technically supposed to be in the business of deciding what is religious and what isn't, but they often can't avoid doing so, particularly when religious beliefs intersect with politics. Talk about what your knowledge is of the Religious Freedom Act.
Well, actually, what I go back to is an American Indian Religious Freedom Act of 1978. It was a time I was taking courses in college, you know, I was fresh in college, and I was taking American Indian Studies courses. And we were studying all the policies that surrounded indigenous people, North American Indians. And this was one because there were peoples that were using ceremonies and that religious ceremonies that they were using peyote. And they were getting busted, and especially in the Southwest. They were getting arrested, busted, you know, and charged with, you know, illegal drugs. And they pushed Congress to enact an act that would allow them to practice their spiritual beliefs because it was religion, you know, and it was a potential constitutional Supreme Court argument, and Congress passed it for them. I remember there was still more hassles about the enforcement around peyote, you know, which is a cactus that has hallucinogenic drugs in it, you know, and, you know, naturally. And, you know, people were fighting for their religious freedoms. And I thought that was like great, you know, and so I supported it. And what happened over the years is that same sort of win that was for American Indians, for indigenous people, North American indigenous people, had morphed into religious protections for, you know, like Hobby Lobby, you know, and like a landlord that wouldn't rent to gay people, that it would have allowable discrimination based on a political issue. And it was morphed into other laws, you know, and I haven't studied all the laws of the specific one that they're talking about in this article that had, you know, been brought up and passed. But now I see it being morphed into this thing for the so-called progressives, you know, the movement that's using these laws again. And then they start throwing in the spirituality piece, you know, and kind of co-opting the same sort of thing like what Hobby Lobby did to their employees. And I think it's really a kind of an abuse of something that was really designed for cultural issues. And it's just been, you know, just taken by these other groups of people and used for their purposes.
If you don't know the history of the Religious Freedom Act, it was introduced by the Clinton administration. Democrats signed by Clinton at a time when Democrats were trying to address a backlash of removing religion from schools, from the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And they believed that this could help balance some of that. President Clinton, who signed the law, was reportedly captivated by Yale Law professor Stephen Carter's widely influential book, The Culture of Disbelief, which argued that American liberal elites had wrongly pushed religion out of the public sphere. The legislation was triggered not by a Bible-thumping politician, but by a 1990 court case involving Native American hallucinogens and employee rights. In Employment Division versus Smith, the court ruled Oregon could deny unemployment benefits to two Native American people who had used the illegal drug peyote, even though it was part of a Native American religious ceremony. The court had actually been denying all sorts of religious claims all along, but the Smith decision caught many Americans off guard. It prompted a backlash across the political spectrum by lawmakers who worried it threatened religious freedom, particularly for practitioners of minority faiths. That's the second time you heard that, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a really important thing because I think it's going to be a really hard battle for them to win. And the Religious Freedom Restoration Act stipulates that government cannot substantially burden a person's exercise of religion, even if that burden comes from a general law. So even if there's a law that prohibits you from doing a thing, the fact that your religious freedom remains intact supersedes that law. Even if that law doesn't have anything specifically to say about you practicing your religion. Essentially, the law sets up a framework for religious actors to carve out exemptions for themselves if they can show that they were expressing their religious convictions within the law. Do you see the loophole there?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're like, another loophole. We have to request asylum, and the people that are going and doing the human smuggling have to say it's because of their religious beliefs, you see, that they're doing this. I wanted to share with you the No More Deaths Volunteers part. It says here, the No More Deaths Volunteers aren't the only progressives raising religious freedom claims in court. They're just the latest. Catholic activists with the Kings Bay Plowshares were charged with trespassing, conspiracy, and destruction of property after they entered a Georgia naval base to symbolically dismantle nuclear weapons. And this is where Duke comes in, because you know all about the Plowshares.
Oh, Plowshares, yeah. Back in the early 1990s. Used to work with them because there's a lot of missile sites in North Dakota. Went to nonviolent civil disobedience trainings with the Plowshares. I was a cameraman for one of their actions where they took over a missile site in North Dakota and all got arrested to argue that nuclear weapons are against international law, therefore they should be banned in the United States. That was their whole effort of doing that. No one was hurt. No property was destroyed. There was just a lot of 300 people outside of a missile silo that made it inactive for a few hours and got a bunch of people arrested. And I always thought the Plowshares, I always talked to them, you know, but they, you know, they had this religious slant, you know, and it was like, oh, that's cool, you know, but it's like, it was almost more a religious culty slant that I saw, you know, it was just like, and I worked with them for a while, then I broke off from them because I thought I something weird culty feelings every time I got together with them, and I wasn't about to go on tour with them or anything like that, so I just let them go their merry way. And so that was my experience with the Plowshares, and quite a long time ago. Like I said, it was the early 1990s.
And there's other religious groups, a group of nuns from the Blood of Christ Church that's in this article as well. The examples that they give us of who's used this, who's tried to establish themselves under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act is very interesting because there's a history. Some people have used it to their advantage and have been successful, while others have not. The No More Deaths group, who's attempting to use it now, has said that since 2014, at least 1,400 migrants have died while attempting to cross the U.S.-Mexico border. And No More Deaths, which was founded in 2004, has been an official ministry of the Universalist Unitarian Church of Tucson. This particular piece of information blew me away because I was like, what? They were at Standing Rock. Remember a contingent of ministers from Universalist Unitarian churches from all over the country went to Standing Rock?
Yeah, we interviewed them. We had on our webpage under the updates on Standing Rock section.
Yes. Go to the updates on Standing Rock section. Click on, type in, I'm sure you can just type in Universalist Unitarian it'll bring you to their interviews. They played a central role in housing people, in giving a place for people to come and speak at, like people from the Indigenous Environmental Network, Myron Dewey, Digital Smoke Signals, Winona LaDuke of Honor the Earth, etc., etc. The Universalist Unitarians were very involved. And folks, do you know what happened when I contacted the minister of the Bismarck Universalist Unitarian Church to tell her that Melanie Stoneman was a kidnapper, that she was dangerous, that I had no idea why she had been put in charge of evacuations at the camps at Standing Rock, but that that was a dangerous and stupid idea, and that there were some people that did not want to be associated with her in any way, shape, or form, that did not want to get arrested, that did not want to have contact with some of these leaders at the camp, were looking for other safe shelters. And she told me they were committed to meeting with Melanie Stoneman and the group of the Indigenous leadership Standing Rock. Anyway.
They basically hired her for a project. I mean, they're going to pay her. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, no. And at the same time, we were helping people get out of camp because it was getting dangerous, getting cold. And they wanted to leave during the hot time, you know, the cold time. And we had worked with the Unitarian Universalist Church in Bismarck to find housing for people, find places for people to stay. And she said, I don't think we want to give the message that people are leaving camp or should leave camp or wanting to leave camp. And we're like, well, these like these nine people want to, and they're sitting in their house, you know, and they want to be close to camp. They're going to go back, but they want to get out now, you know. And I thought, wow, this woman's taking on these strategies that are contrary to the safety of people. And that kind of like, I don't think we worked much with her after that.
Nope. But it was very surprising that these people of this faith denomination, which is really non-denominational, is also the same religion, I guess, as the No More Deaths group, and that they're trying to use this strategy. But you know what the most jaw-dropping part of this article was? The fact that a lawyer named Nicole Deschanel talks about where originally they were using this Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And it goes back to Standing Rock.
Oh.
It goes back to Standing Rock. Once again, Nicole Deschanel, it's a little bit further down after the No More Deaths part.
I don't have any more.
Oh, sorry. Well, I do. It says Nicole Deschanel, a lawyer who represented the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe in their effort to block the Dakota Access Pipeline litigation, thinks the tribe faced the same hurdle when it brought a Religious Freedom Restoration Act claim during litigation. Access to fresh, pure, natural, unadulterated water is part of many Sioux religious ceremonies, including the Anipi, or sweat lodge ceremony, that precedes other rites, according to Deschanel, who is also a member of the tribe. It is not an overstatement to say that water is the life of our religious belief, she said. An Anipi is a sweat lodge ceremony, like the one that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez took part in at Standing Rock, after which she claims she decided to become a candidate for Congress. Maybe the Inipi didn't just teach her about the Religious Freedom Restoration Act and her need to protect the water and to create her Green New Deal, but also the origins of these activists today who are using it. The judge ultimately dismissed the Religious Freedom Restoration Act claim for the tribe because the tribe raised the issue too late. Hmm. But Deschanel believes bias was at work in their decision. Quote, we have a major impediment. Native religious beliefs are not like Catholicism or Judaism in that we don't have centuries of scholarly, literate people who've been writing down or memorializing the doctrine of our religion. We come from an oral tradition. The Cheyenne River Sioux are considering an appeal in that case, and if so, will raise a Religious Freedom Restoration Act claim again. It is absolutely an issue worth pressing for us, Deschanel said. We believe we have just as much right as a Catholic anti-choice person to live our lives in accordance to our beliefs. There's a connection to the faith for Standing Rock and the precedent that they are trying to set. Deschanel's Facebook page looks thusly. She has a bunch of people in the background there. She works at Big Fire Law and Policy Group, people on horses with war bonnets. In her About section, you can see that she has Omaha, Nebraska, and Washington, D.C. as places where she works or lives, and that she is working at that law firm that I mentioned. Here are posts. Here's her post about this article in The Nation as well. Can you read that, Duke?
Mm-hmm. I was so honored to be asked by The Nation for my thoughts on how courts must expand their view of religious freedom to vindicate the solemn and sacred religious beliefs of those operating outside the Judeo-Christian mainstream. Minnie Wacone, Go Big Fire. And then she has an article, Big Fire.
And Policy Group.
Policy LLP. Group, LLP.
Here is her No Dapple t-shirt she wore on her Facebook page to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline. We saw a lot of that. And she's talking there in 2018, I believe, or 2017, about the fact that DAPL has been out of the spotlight for a while. And the perception for everyone is that the Indians lost. Well, I would say that is probably because they built the pipeline and many of the so-called lawsuits against the Army Corps of Engineers, Morton County, the President of the United States, etc., were never brought to fruition. But let's see who promoted that Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe announcement that they would be using the Religious Freedom Act and suing. Here is one of those people, Indigenous Life Movement.
Of course.
The same group that we've been talking about is connected to Doug McLean.
Yep.
Yes. And who else promoted it? Bold Nebraska did. Is that at the very top, Bold Nebraska?
I think so.
There it is, Bold Nebraska promoting it. And below that you have Dallas Goldtooth.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And that's all Indigenous Environmental Network people.
Mm-hmm.
And they also made a movie, Duke. It's called The Water Protectors of Wakpa Waste. And there's Deschanel is in the movie. Ivan Looking Horse, the brother of Arvel Looking Horse, is in the movie. Yeah. The tribal leader of the Cheyenne River Sioux tribe. I wanted to call him Fitzgerald. It's not Fitzgerald. What, Frazier. Harold Frazier is in it.
Yeah.
And of course, Joy Braun of the Indigenous Environmental Network is in there as well. Listen to this clip from the movie. At the very end, notice how when she talks about the orchestrated clash between Morton County and protesters, many of whom were actors, many of whom were not even Native American and certainly weren't part of the Dakota from Standing Rock. They were extras in movies in the past, and they were extras in these documentaries that came out of Standing Rock that went there to get themselves shot at, went there for the photo op. How she talks about that being, for her, the stand. And how she goes into a teary-eyed recollection of the trauma that it caused her, and talks about how she would do it again if she has to. A lot of these folks manufacture not only these crises, but their pain. Like the pictures of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wincing in front of a empty parking lot for the photo op, folks.
Mm-hmm.
see it for what it is. A lot of these folks are just actors, many of them very poor ones. Here's the video clip.
I'm fighting for the survival of my people. I'm fighting for the survival of my grandchildren.
The Keystone Pipeline delivers oil from Canada all the way to Illinois and Texas.
So we have Keystone XL coming up along the Cheyenne River. Should that break, that's tar sands. You have Dakota Access Pipeline. That breaks. That's Bakken. These are two sides of our reservation. That threatens our water intake. That threatens everything, not just for human intake, but for all of our cows, all of our deer, all of our animal life, everything, everything.
The proposal, called the Keystone XL, has sparked criticism from Nebraskans like Art Tandra.
What gives a foreign corporation the right to come in and take land away from Nebraska farmers?
They have targeted the Lakota people. And we have to remember, this isn't the first time we faced this. Don't forget what they did to the buffalo. They came in and authorized these buffalo hunters to come in and kill off our main supply of everything that we needed. That was our supermarket, was the buffalo. And they came in and they slaughtered them to the point where there were these huge mountains of buffalo skulls. This isn't the first time it's gone on. Only now, not only is it state-sponsored by the government, but you got these big companies. It's always about money. We have to rethink what is important to us. You know, I know some people think, oh, they're just fighting for water. Oh, they're just a bunch of tree huggers or environmentalists. No. I'm fighting for the survival of my people. I'm fighting for the survival of my grandchildren. And let me tell you something. These companies are willing to do anything. Anything. To get what they want. Will I face it again? Yeah. I'll do it again. I don't want to. I don't want to do it again. But I will.
Well, there you have it. The use of the religious, the faith-based, the imagery of Native Americans, that prophecy, the eagle, the condor, the fight for resources, the staged tears, the fake outrage. It is all part and parcel of the propaganda to control our emotions and keep us from having a productive conversation about solutions, not just at our southern border, but within our immigration policy and in the detention facilities. Thank you for being here to listen to Gotta Have Faith on A Mexican Crossing Lines with your hosts, Cindy Gomez-Shump
and Duke Gomez-Shump.
You're listening to 88.1 FM KPPP LP. Fargo Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. Have a great 4th of July and good night.